Welcome to Basic Brewing Radio for Thursday, October 6th, 2016. I'm James Spencer. Here at Basic Brewing Radio, we're all about home brewing. This week, our series profiling Northwest Arkansas breweries continues with New Province Brewing in Rogers, Arkansas. Owner and head brewer Derek McEnroe decided to step up earlier this year from home brewing into a 15-barrel system. We'll check in with him to see how it's going and to taste some of his beers. If you're new to home brewing or would like to get into the hobby for the first time, check out our website, basicbrewing.com, where you can find archives of our audio and video podcasts and our DVDs to walk you through basic and more advanced brewing techniques. And if you buy any of our DVD combos, you get a free Basic Brewing bottle opener. And don't forget to get a copy of our Brewer's Logbook. You can use it to log and track up to 50 batches of beer. You can follow me on Twitter. My username is Basic Brewing, all one word. We also have a Basic Brewing Radio and Basic Brewing Video page on Facebook at facebook.com/basicbrewing. Thanks again to everybody clicking on the Amazon.com associate link on our basicbrewing.com site. Whenever you think of Amazon shopping, think of us first. Go to basicbrewing.com and click on our Amazon ad. It'll take you to Amazon. It won't cost you any extra, and you'll be helping us to bring this show. We greatly appreciate your support. We also have associate links for Brew Your Own magazine and the American Homebrewers Association on our site as well. You can find our Basic Brewing iPhone app on iTunes, our Android app on Amazon.com. We have a Windows phone app. We're on the BlackBerry podcast directory, and we're on the Stitcher app as well. We're on Google Play Music, and we're on the iHeartRadio app too. If you want to put a tip in our tip jar, some coinage in our virtual guitar case, you can go to basicbrewing.com/support, and thanks to everybody who's done so already. One quick commerce-related note. Every now and then, and recently, I got an email asking if there's any other way than PayPal to pay for our stuff in the store. Well, if you look at the PayPal payment page as you're checking out of the store on basicbrewingshop.com, you'll see a link to pay with a credit card. So, you can buy stuff from the basicbrewingshop.com site without having a PayPal account. If you follow me on Twitter and the like, our basic brewing Facebook page, you might have seen pictures that I posted earlier in the week of the 100% rye tart session beer, kettle soured session beer that I racked onto fruit 2 weeks earlier than the pictures I posted. The half that I put onto canned tart cherries looked normal in the fermenter, but the half I racked onto peach and mango chunks that I bought frozen from the grocery store had sort of a white, fluffy pellicle on it. Now, I don't have much experience with such things, so, it makes me nervous. So I sent a picture of the pellicle to mad fermentationist Mike Tonsmeyer, author of American Sour Beers. And Mike said, always impossible to tell from a photo, but it certainly looks like a wild yeast pellicle. If it smells all right, I think you should be fine. Even just kettle souring to a mild pH of 4.5 is enough to prevent pathogens from growing. Before kettle souring, I now add 2 to 3 grams of 88% lactic acid per gallon to achieve 4.5. Mike says, in addition to preventing unwanted enteric bacteria from growing, it also reduces the ability of lactobacillus to munch proteins, helping to preserve body and head. Well, I appreciate that information, Mike. And I know it's tough to diagnose stuff long distance. People send me stuff, asking me what the heck's going on with this or that. And sometimes I just have to guess. So, and seeing weird stuff on fermentations makes me nervous even after 20 years of brewing. So it's good to have some reassurance from somebody who knows what he's talking about. I mean, I pasteurized the beer or the wort before adding the probiotics with the lactobacillus. And then after, it kettle soured for a few days, quote unquote kettle soured, even though it was in a carboy, I pasteurized again when adding hops before pitching the yeast. Then there was fermentation, which added around 2% alcohol. And so you add the alcohol to the lower pH from the kettle souring, And you would think that that would create a hostile environment for pathogens. Now, I have to say that I'm not an expert in this kind of stuff, so do your own research. Don't trust, you know, what I say on this stuff. When it comes to food safety, I get a bit, you know, OCD. So anyway, I went ahead and I tasted the beers, and they were in Mr. Beer fermenters with a little spigot on the front, so that made that easy. And they both tasted good. So the peach mango was a little more tart, but I don't know if that was from the extra critters that came from the fruit or tartness from the fruit itself. So stay tuned for updates on that. And one of them, I can't remember if it was the peach or the mango, had citric acid added for stabilization as well. So that's, you know, so that's going to add to the acidity too. By the way, Mike Tonsmeyer also said, I've been enjoying all the NHC content. We were a bit like the plague, though. Christian and Josh were both gone from their breweries by the time the episodes aired. So, it's one of the dangers of holding content for a period of time. Things can change. I knew that Christian was leaving Gordon Beers, but I didn't know that Josh had left Blue Jacket. So best of luck to both of those guys. They're good episodes anyway, and they're kind of snapshots in time. So I enjoyed being with them for those for that day. All that happened in one day. It's hard to imagine. I posted a quick episode of a Basic Brewing video this past week showing Steve and me demonstrating my method of bottling small batches. I got a range of reactions from the video. We went straight from the small fermenter, or minter, if you're, you know, going to be familiar. we went straight from the small fermenter to the bottles using an auto siphon and a hose and a bottling wand without going through the in-between step of racking into a bottling bucket and then adding priming sugar there. We advocate adding priming sugar tablets in the bottle as you transfer the beer. And I do this method for two reasons. First, especially when you're bottling small batches, you know, that wind up being less than a gallon, it's hard to be precise in calculating priming sugar additions and transferring that small amount of beer into the bottling bucket and then into the bottle exposes it to a lot of oxygen. And then there's always some waste in the bottling bucket itself. So anyway, that's why I do it that way. We demonstrated with a 2 gallon fermenter or the fermenter that I use for 2 gallon batches. And one could argue that it'd be easier to calculate priming sugar for 2 gallons than, you know, 1 gallon or less than 1 gallon. But, you know, that's the way I do it. If you do it a different way and you like it, well, that's fine. It's always good to hear of other ways of doing things. And we all learn from each other. Now let's talk about our sponsors, Desiree and Dave from High Gravity in Tulsa. You've heard Steve and me talk about our High Gravity electric brew-in-a-bag systems, which we both love. But High Gravity also has electric brewing systems for those who lean toward a more traditional way. On highgravitybrew.com, you can check out their 3-tier electric brewing systems. The brew-your-own electric brewing system feature on High Gravity Brew lets you customize your system to fit your needs. High Gravity offers systems from 5 gallons all the way up to 2 barrels. You can choose from a variety of controllers that control your heat and pumps. Pick the one that's right for you. In fact, if you're a gearhead and you already have most of your system already assembled, you can just pick up a controller itself, and they have a wide variety of those, both the 240-volt and 120-volt. And for ingredients and many other products, High Gravity offers $7.99 shipping. Check it all out at highgravitybrew.com. And please thank Desiree and Dave for their continued support of this podcast. Okay, I've been meaning to visit New Province in Rogers, Arkansas for a while now, and I finally got a chance to visit this week. I'm very impressed with the facility and the beer. Derek and I had a very good chat about transitioning into professional brewing and some recipe formulation tips on the beers that he's brewing. Derek McEnroe, welcome to Basic Brewing Radio.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
Where are we at?
We are we're in our brew house in Rogers. So first thing you probably notice is we got quite a bit of space back here. It's about, whole building's 8,100 square feet. Brew house size about 6,000 of that. The rest is our tasting room. So we've got lots of room to grow here. But you'll see here we've got a, if you come over this way with me here, we'll have, we got a 15 barrel brew house, 30 barrel hot liquor tank, 30 barrel mash tun and boil kettle. We have 15 barrel mash tun and boil kettle, 30 barrel fermenters. We have four of them so that we can eventually get into double batching. And then a 30 barrel bright tank. We have a steam boiler, so that's how all of our tanks are heated. And a mill, we mill all of our grain here in house, and it augers up over to the brew house and dumps directly into the mash tun. All of our cold side tanks, fermenter and bright tank, are glycol jacketed, so we can temperature control all of that. And we got to build this thing from the ground up, so we had a lot of say in the design and the layout, and got to put the trench drains in ahead of time, which is always beneficial. So really happy with how it turned out, and we got lots of room to grow. So
yeah, it's beautiful. In the background you may hear Court Castleberry banging around and in pouring water and stuff. Hey Court.
Hey James.
Court, formerly of Fossil Cove, and now with you, so Court's a good guy.
Absolutely.
It's beautiful. I mean, the thing is, so you built the whole building from the ground up?
Yeah, so we don't own it. We lease it, but when we came upon the location, it was just a gravel lot. So, they were intending to build this 8,100-square-foot warehouse, but we got to play around with where the doors are at, add windows in the tap room. The trench drains, utilities, stuff like that, that's very beneficial for us as a brewery to decide where that's going to go ahead of time rather than trying to force fit something into an older space. So that is the plus of doing it this way.
Where did the system come from?
It was from a manufacturer out of South Carolina, Deutsche Beverage Technology. The equipment itself is manufactured in China, but they're kind of our middleman. They help us get it set up, designed. It's all custom made, and all the quality is all there, even though it's made in China. A lot of people are worried about that, but things have changed in the past 10 years or so. So the quality's there now, as long as you've got someone on your side, which is Deutsche Beverage Technology's role in the whole process. So, yep.
So how did you get here? How did you start? What was the seed that began the journey?
Yeah, started home brewing when I worked for Miller Coors in 2011. My mom got me a homebrew kit. That was, I guess, the absolute seed for my birthday. And I just never stopped homebrewing from there. Just got the bug like everyone does, And years later, me and my wife kind of working in corporate America, getting a little tired of that, and saw the other breweries popping up, and we're just kind of like, hey, we could do that, and if we sit around and wait 5-10 years, we'll see another 5-10 breweries pop up, and we'll look back and regret it, that we didn't do it. And so we decided to just kind of move forward with no regrets and go ahead and jump in. So that's where we're at today.
What did you do for Miller Coors?
I was a sales category analyst there for Walmart. So I did a lot of, like modular analysis and sales analysis type stuff. And then I moved on from there after about a year and worked with Campbell Soup, Pepperidge Farm. Did more of the same, similar stuff, just different categories. So that's kind of my background. But, I was only in professional world for, four or five years. So before I jumped ship. So it didn't take me long to figure out that wasn't what I wanted to do for the rest of my life.
So what did you learn from Miller Coors that you have implemented or tried to implement here?
Yeah, I don't know if anything in particular that I've implemented, but maybe just perspective on the industry. 5 years ago, I feel like we were still fairly early on in the craft beer movement, and we saw the beginnings of that, you know, in the sales numbers, I guess, and what beers were on trend and up and coming. And then, you know, just some base knowledge on the industry dynamics, distribution laws, things like that, that, I guess I was slightly fortunate to have a little bit of background on coming into it. But yeah, I think just a good base knowledge of brewing and large scale brewing and processes, has helped me so far.
And marketing. I mean, they've, yeah, I mean, you were in marketing, so you were kind of, in the, you know, wearing the black hat, in the view of a lot of craft beer fans out there. Was it as bad as it, I mean, you probably don't want to talk smack about one of your former employers, but, you know, what is your perspective on all that?
I think that no matter what, you've got to respect what they do, which is they produce a astonishing amount of beer, that is extremely consistent and, one of the hardest styles to brew, consistently. So I think no matter what you think about their beer or what your beer taste is, I think you have to respect that, for one thing. Also, what a lot of people might not know is how much of the process they take under their own control. They kiln a lot of their own grain, which when I was a fledgling home brewer, and that was my only experience, was, you know, Miller Coors, because that's what I'd seen in their plants, was Miller Coors kilns their own grain, does the whole process, right, from raw barley on. And I was like, how the heck am I going to do that in my kitchen? You know what I mean? And so that's why I was like, oh, okay, there's extract. Oh, okay, you can just buy the grain, or, you know, from maltsters and whatnot. So, I mean, there's just a lot behind the scenes that is pretty incredible, what they do. And,
So how do you go from – what size was your system at home when you decided to jump up?
Yeah, it's just five gallons and 5 gallon batches, so – I had a nice little boil kettle, still doing all my mashing and lautering out of igloo coolers. I did have like a plate chiller, you know, but I hadn't gotten into any like pumps or anything. So I was doing, you know, pretty manual type stuff. Nothing fancy. Just probably what a lot of your listeners are using.
So how did you train yourself? I mean, cause you know, a home brewer walking into this, mm-hmm. with all the hoses and all the connectors and all the, you know, you got a boiler for crying out loud. And you know, this is a big step. How did you make that leap?
Yeah. Man, I don't know. Just a lot of kind of learning on the fly. The manufacturer, Deutsche Beverage Technology, helped with a lot of the initial setup and walked through how to use a lot of the equipment, the boiler, you know, all the inner workings of the brew house itself. That's not to say we didn't have a lot of mistakes, you know, along the way, learning things the hard way. You know, we're still learning every day just in the brew house, just different, how the yeasts are reacting differently. There's all sorts of things. We're still learning a lot in this environment. So.
And how long have you been up and running?
Since March 5th. So going on like 7 months. Yeah.
Wow. How long was it till you hit your stride? How long was it till you said, okay, I've got this now?
Maybe.
Are we still waiting?
Yeah, a little bit. Yeah, I mean, I think maybe, it's like, I don't know, if the first month or two, I was doing pretty much everything by myself, brewing and delivering beer, and I was still bartending quite a bit at the time, and pretty quick, I realized I needed help. So that's when we brought Court back. And so that's helped quite a bit, having him back here to deal with a lot of this stuff. But I feel like we're in a pretty good spot now. You know, there's still things that we're working on to improve, always trying to improve. But we feel pretty comfortable overall with the system now, I think. So, I think we're in a good spot.
From the marketing side, as you said, you know, Northwest Arkansas and even Benton County is growing in the craft beer scene, and breweries are popping up left and right. Thank goodness. How do you position yourself in that market? You've got the marketing background. What's your strategy?
Yeah, I mean, first and foremost, we just want to make good beer. Like, that's what we're here to do. But you know, we did position ourselves a little differently. I feel like up here we did want to purposely build a nicer environment for people to come and drink the beer. So we have a nice little tap room. I feel like people can hang out and have a good time. So we really want to build on that and have people come here to really experience the beer a little differently than they might at other places. We want our bartenders to be very well educated on our beers and the process, so that they can explain to people coming in and help them learn about craft beer. So I think that's just our role, is just to help educate and bring people along on the journey that we're going on. And like I said, at the root of it all, we just want to make good beer.
Do you consider yourself to be an entry-level kind of craft beer place, or do you want to be adventurous as well and experimental, or what's your mindset around that?
I think we cover all those bases. So we have beers like our White Queen, our Belgian Wit, which actually was going to be our seasonal spring beer, but it's done so well for us that we decided to keep it on year-round. And then we've got our pale ale that's a pretty approachable pale ale for people. So those two are nice entry-level beers for people, and we've had a lot of success converting some, you know, light beer drinkers on those beers. But, you know, at the same time, we want to push some boundaries, and I think Court helps us do that. I think I'm a little more traditional in my approach, and he's a little more forward-thinking. So it's a good balance. And one thing we did fairly early on, we've got a little 15-gallon pilot batch system, which is right behind you there. And we... So now our goal is to try to brew on that almost every week, have a new beer out, hopefully at least every 2 weeks. And those will be more experimental type batches. The other week we did a green tea saison, Court did, on that, and it went over really well. We've got some other ones down the line. We're doing a wheat stout, which is, I guess, kind of unique in itself. But then we pulled off a little bit of wort from that and did a imperial wheat stout on the pilot batch system. So it'll kind of be like the sister beer to that. And these are all very limited batch, like two kegs at most for most of these. Got a chai rye brown ale that's coming. That's just got a lot of chai type spices in it, rye base brown ale. So doing a lot of stuff like that on the side, in addition to the larger batches that may not be economical to do as a large batch, but can be really fun and interesting in the tap room.
Well, cool. Speaking of the tap room, why don't we start walking toward that direction? What is your how's your beer distributed now?
It's all self-distributed, so that's me right now. So you'll see me driving around in a white van. Used to be labeled as a painting van. just recently got those labels torn off, and now I've got my own magnets on there. So yeah, I'm riding around delivering beer, cleaning lines. So yeah, say hi if you see me.
Are you packaging in anything other than kegs right now?
Not right now, but we did recently purchase Fossil Cove's old canning line, or not really a line, but it's a two-head canner. so that's in the future, probably next year, early part of next year. We're hoping to get into cans.
Awesome. Yeah. Well, here we are in the tasting room, and it's got a really nice bar. With a pool table and bar tables set up as well, seating. You see tons of traffic going by on the street, which has got to be good for you. Well, there's a funeral home across the street too, but that's not but maybe that's a plus.
They need a drink too.
Yeah, that's right. I used to work at a funeral home. funeral directors are thirsty. Some of them. but this is very nice. It's how would you describe the decor?
The way I talk to people about it is like a refined rustic kind of feel. So it's very clean, fairly modern, clean lines. But we have some kind of rustic style touches to it. All of our tabletops are handmade, reclaimed wood, like metal tops that have been kind of burnished down. And then we have a very raw concrete bar top that just kind of balances some of the clean wood looks. Then we have a lot of kind of pipe type fixtures from our tap tower to some of our lighting fixtures, and then in addition we've got some pallets hanging from the wall from the ceiling. So that was kind of a cost saving measure, but it turned out looking pretty cool, I think. So
yeah. So how is concrete for a bar top? Is it fairly unforgiving if you happen to drop a glass or a bottle?
Yeah, we haven't. I don't know that maybe we've broken one glass, someone setting it down too hard. But no, I think that it's worked out pretty well. I think we need to probably do another layer of sealer on there, because if you leave a glass on there too long, it'll end up kind of staining and leaving that ring. But overall, people really like it. The texture is really cool. So it's just, people just like kind of almost rubbing it, you know, like petting it like a dog or something, you know, they just really like it. And I do too. I just kind of like just feeling it on my hands, you know. It's just a very raw, natural, like feeling concrete. So yeah, it's turned out really well.
It's better to feel the concrete as you're drinking than after you've been drinking a while. Wow. So you've set me up with a line of samples here.
Yep.
And I'm gonna sit over here, I'm gonna sample small because it's just me. So where should I start? Go from left to right?
You know what? Let's start here. Let's start with that's our lightest beer. That's our Belgian Wit. Like I said, that was gonna be a spring seasonal for us, but we've decided to keep it on year round, and that's very likely the beer we're gonna end up canning. It's a fairly traditional Belgian Witz beer, with the exception that we only have two in-house yeasts, right? So we have our kind of English-American style yeast, which is 007 for homebrewers, and then we have a Belgian yeast that right now we're using, WLP 500, so a Trappist ale strain. So we didn't bring in a special wit yeast, right? So we ended up using just the 500. So we just fermented a lot lower to try to keep a little cleaner, a little more earthy. And then to get a little bit of tartness out of it, we actually add acidulated malt. So that was kind of our solution to that. So, you know, for people trying to do something similar with acidulated malt, little goes a long way. I think we use 3% in the wit. And it's just a very light tartness. So your mileage may vary, but that's what we do in the wit.
Yeah, it's very nice. It's cloudy. It's wheaty, I would say. So it's a bit bready, but there is, you know, kind of the Belgian character in there from the yeast. And I was going to say it's a little bit tart, yeah, which is a nice balance to the breadiness of the yeast character and of the grain as well. Very nice.
Thank you. Yeah, we do add orange peel and coriander in the boil. In the whirlpool stage, but we try not to overdo it. It's just kind of a part of the beer, not the beer itself. So, yeah.
And these have been warming while we've been talking in the brewery, so yeah. They're nice and flavorful, which is good. What's next?
Then let's go to Civilian. That's our pale ale. It's a fairly mild pale ale in terms of bitterness. It's 45 IBU, but we've got some crystal malt in there to kind of balance that out. So you get a little bit of like a honeysuckle type sweetness from that malt. And then on the hop side, we use Cascade and Crystal. So you're going to get a little bit of grapefruity, pine, citrus, floral type notes out of the hops. So like I said, it's a very approachable pale ale for people, not overly hoppy.
That's really good. It's nice and clean. And like you said, the citrus notes come off the hops on the nose. The bitterness is fairly low as far as today's standards go, but that's probably good.
Yep.
Very drinkable. And you use the English yeast with this?
Yep, we do. So the pale and IPA, we ferment the 007 at about 66. So we just want it super clean. So that's our goal with that.
Very nice. Had to have another sip. Okay, moving on down. We're going quick.
All good.
What's next?
That is our IPA. We call it Philosopher. Philosopher is... we felt like there was a little bit of a gap in IPAs in terms of kind of that super hoppy, on flavor-wise, hoppy, fruity kind of IPA. So that's what we set out to brew. We use Galaxy, Mosaic, and Centennial as our main flavoring hops. It's 70 IBU, but like you'll see, it's a fairly smooth 70. We focus a lot on that flavor, so we've got a lot of late hop additions in there. Galaxy, Mosaic are our sole Whirlpool additions, and then we do more Galaxy, Mosaic, and Centennial in the boil, or sorry, the dry hop. And one thing we do differently, which some brewers have done it, it's documented, but we actually do a recirculation during our dry hop. So we do about a 3-hour recirc during the dry hop in the fermenter, and it just yields extremely good extraction of all those hop aromas. So we're really happy with that process, and I think we're going to continue doing that on the IPA.
So it just kind of helps to actually scrub the hops.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's just, if you just think about contact time, surface area type ideas, the hops just sitting on the top, you know, are only touching a fraction of the beer. And then over time, you know, they kind of drift down and then they settle at the bottom. Well, you're not getting a whole ton of contact time throughout the whole beer. So the idea is to just recirculate the whole thing, just mix it all up and get it good and just mix it up in there. And all those oils are going to just extract all that much better. So, yeah, we were really, really happy with the results.
So three questions.
Yep.
Pellets or whole? What temperature do you dry hop? And then do you remove the yeast before you do so?
Mm-hmm. Yep. So we do remove the yeast first. We crash it first from, you know, about 66 to down to 60. And then we harvest the yeast or dump it, depending. And then we dry hop at 60 and do the recirc. We literally do a 3-hour recirc, and then we crash it straight down to 30. Yep. Huh. So pretty fast.
And whole or pellet?
Oh, sorry, yes. Pellet. Everything is pellet. You know, honestly, I've never used whole hops. Not something I'm opposed to, but just from what I've read and seen and what you kind of think of, it just seems a lot more difficult.
I like to call them wort sponges.
Yeah, they suck up a lot of waste in there, so yeah.
At least at my scale, in my experience.
Yeah, that makes sense. But I mean, there's a lot of people that have approached us that are growing hops locally, you know, on probably a small-ish scale. That we wouldn't be opposed to using, if not possible, on a large batch, maybe one of our 15-gallon pilot batches. I think that would be really cool. So,
yeah, you have to color me skeptical on the Arkansas hops because I've grown them myself, and I've admitted on the show that I was a poor hop daddy because there were some things that I could have done to do better. But you know, I'm skeptical, but I'm optimistic. If somebody comes up with an Arkansas hop that does well, I'll be the first in line to use it. But that would be a good use for the pilot system for
right,
sure.
Yeah.
This IPA, there's some resinous flavors coming in that aren't in the pale ale, and that should appeal to hop heads as well. But it's not overly. It doesn't smack you in the face with bitterness. It's
right.
Not as sort of juicy as, and it's not cloudy, so it's not sort of as juicy as like a New England IPA that we tasted up there when we were in Baltimore. But it's very nice. I'm enjoying it quite a bit. It's very, very clean, and I hate to use the word drinkable because it's just so, it's kind of a default word.
But I mean, a lot of people that aren't IPA fans find themselves able to drink this because I think, like you said, there's not a lot of harsh bitterness there, a lot of tropical fruity flavors. You know, we get like some mango, pineapple, citrus. And yeah, just so it's been a real big hit, honestly, with veteran IPA drinkers and new ones alike. So we're really happy with it.
Yeah, it's nicely balanced. And like I say, that kind of resinous bitterness comes in there at the end to balance the malt, and I enjoy the malt bill as well. Very nice. So what's next? We managed to talk about that one for a few minutes. So,
yeah, next one up is Citadel. This is our Belgian Trappel. This was actually a very recent replacement for us. We used to, as some of our customers may know, brew the Migrant, which was our Belgian double. So this is new for us. We're really pretty happy with it overall. It's pretty traditional, right? We use Pilsner malt, Vienna, and aromatic in it. We brew it. We ferment it out with that WLP 500. The difference between this one and the Migrant is that we restrained the fermentation temperature on this a little bit more. So the Migrant we would actually let run. We'd pitch at like 64, let it run to 75, 78, just kind of let it go. This one we decided to restrain it down at 70, so it wouldn't kind of run away with a lot of those bubblegummy flavors, which we were trying to get out of the double, but this one we wanted a little different profile. and then also we use I want to say 20% is sugar in this guy. So in the double we were using traditional Belgian candy sugar. This one we just actually use cane sugar. Oh. Yeah, just right into the boil.
It's nice as well. I'm a triple fan. There seems to be a regionalism. Fossil Cove says Trappel, and you're saying Trappel.
Well, let me explain that. So, so I always said double instead of Dubel. Honestly, I would say the past prior to the past month of my life, I would say triple. But we thought of the name Citadel. And so now we need it to rhyme. So I have changed my pronunciation officially to Trappel. Citadel Trappel. That's what it is.
You marketing guys. All right.
But I hear it every single way, so.
Yeah, whatever, you know, as long as the bartenders know. No, it's good. I mean, the it's not as sort of, like you said, you know, it's not sort of as funky as other triples or trappels I've had. But there is a little bit of the bubblegummy thing going on, which is good. What's the ABV?
8%.
Okay. Well, it doesn't taste like 8%. It's very nice. It's a bit bready as well, which I think is a compliment, because I think when you add a bunch of sugar, there's the danger that you can get kind of cidery, and this is not that at all. Yep. It's got a nice malt backbone, pardon me, and again, very drinkable. I think this is not an insult.
Yeah.
But I think that this would be a good place to bring your friends who don't know anything about craft beer.
Sure.
And sort of and introduce them to these different styles. And it's not saying that these are dumbed down. These are not dumbed down. These are nicely done and nicely balanced. But there is a tendency with craft brewing to brew something and just go out there and be the kind of sort of arrogant bastard of whatever style you're brewing, and there's a place for that, and I'm sure that you're going to do that. But your standard beers are very nicely balanced.
Thank you. Yeah, I think that. Yeah, I mean that's kind of goes back to my approach to brewing in general. I think is I'm just wanting to make good drinkable beers, and then Court kind of pushes our boundaries a little bit, and that's exactly what our 15-gallon system is for. And you might see something crazy up on that board in that seventh slot. And, if you're adventurous, try it, and you might find that you like it.
So what's next?
Next up is our Yeoman Porter. It's, again, a traditional English-style porter. So I kind of beat this drum a little bit about porter versus stout. It is a 4.6% ABV porter, a lot lighter bodied than a lot of people are going to expect out of a quote-unquote dark beer, right? But you still get all those flavors. You get the chocolate, you know, dark chocolate, coffee, roasty, a little bit of toffee in there.
I even get a little tobacco in the nose.
Okay, yeah, yeah. So I think that, we use, in our porter, we use chocolate malt and brown malt. which is a little bit of a lost tradition, at least the brown malt. So, you know, that's kind of how I distinguish porters and stouts, is chocolate malt belongs in stouts, or sorry, porters, and the roast barley is for stouts. Not that you can't mix and match a little bit, but if you want to stay traditional, that's what I think it is. And so this beer, I mean, again, it's for people that are afraid of dark beers. People have found that they really like this. It's very drinkable, like we keep saying, but it just is. It's not going to weigh you down. It's not super thick, lighter embodied, but you still get all those flavors. So we're really happy with this beer, how it turned out. And we're going to keep brewing it this way.
Yeah, it's, you say it's light body, but it's especially coming off the triple,
yeah.
Tripel, it's it's chewy though.
Sure.
It's substantial.
But it's not that cream stout that a lot of people are almost expecting out of every stout they drink these days, or every dark beer they drink these
right.
days. It's just not that beer. So, but yeah, to your point, yeah, it is a little thicker than our IPA or what and whatnot, but absolutely.
So if you're talking to homebrewers, so
yeah.
Talk about the malt bill,
yeah.
Percentages, you know, how you get that balance, and talk about hopping as well.
In this beer in particular?
Mm-hmm.
This beer, we just do one hop addition at the beginning. It's just Magnum, just a bittering addition there. Mm-hmm. And percentage-wise, I think we're around 10% roast malt, which is basically all chocolate. I think we're actually pretty high. We've played with this in the past two batches on this particular beer, is our percentage of caramel malt. We use C60, and we increased it from, I think, maybe like 10% to 15%. I think the first batch just came off a little too dry with the amount of brown malt we had. So we backed off the brown malt a little bit. I think it was at like 10, and I think we cut it in half to like 5. And then increased the caramel malt. We just wanted it to come off just a little bit sweeter. It was just coming off super dry, I felt like. So I think we're in a good spot with it now, and I really like how it came out.
Mm. It's very good. My wife would like that, and she's a dark beer fan. Mm-hmm. And I think she would also like the pale ale and maybe even the IPA as well. She's referred to IPAs as vomit beer because it makes her want to vomit, but because the residual bitterness, you know, in the back of her throat is like,
yeah,
you know, it's the stomach acid kind of reminiscent stuff.
Yeah.
You know, everybody's got their own thing.
Yeah.
So what's the last beer?
This is our double IPA, and this is probably one of the last, I don't know, 2-3 kegs. So this was our summer seasonal. I wanted to do a double IPA, and I wanted to play around with some different hops. So, you know, I was just looking at some hops that were available out there and kind of came up with a couple different flavor profiles that I might want to target, and I decided I wanted to make something super orangey. So I went out there and got some Pacifica and Amarillo, and then we also used some more Centennial in this guy. So it's Pacifica and Amarillo, some of the two flavors that are going to come out of that is orange. So like I said, that's what we were targeting. I feel like you do get a lot of kind of like an orange marmalade, orangey bitterness, like, you know, from the peel and whatnot out of this. I'm really happy with how it came out. It's 95 IBU, 8.7% ABV. Mm. But, you know, again, like as far as bitterness goes, it's 95, but it doesn't taste like 95. And I think that just goes again to our focus on hop flavor versus bitterness. Again, just a ton of late and dry hop additions on this. We do the recirc on this again for the dry hop. And just really happy with how the flavors came out.
Yeah, it's very good. this is more of a hop lovers or a hoppy beer lovers beer. Along with the orangey character, I get, you know, more of the resinous kind of stuff, and there's a bit of the catty flavor as well, which I enjoy. But you know what I'm talking about, the kind of, you know,
some people get it from Citra, yeah.
Some people call it cat pee, but I don't like to call it cat pee. Not that, I don't even own a cat, so I don't know what that means. But it's good. It's delicious. It's again, it's well balanced. It's not like smack you in the face with any kind of one thing over another. It all plays well together.
I think the thing you'll notice on pretty much all of our beers, especially the hoppy beers in particular, we keep a very clean, light malt profile. So we don't have any, you know, we don't have any crystal on this. It's just, you know, it's just two row and some Munich and some sugar to dry it out a little. So the same thing with our IPA, you know, no caramel, a little bit in our pale, but not much. So, you know, I think there's two ways to approach the double IPA is to really back it up with some maltiness. And we decided not to. Like, we kind of feel like it's, you know, we want to just showcase the hops. We don't, you know, the malt's just there to give us the sugar. So we just want to just really showcase this hop character, and I think that's, in general, how we'll approach most of our hoppy beers.
I think that's one thing, and I think Russian River uses sugar in their Pliny. You know, when you get big... It's one thing that that I had to have a bit of time to grasp as I was, you know, calculating recipes and things, is that the more malt that you put in, the more unfermentable sugars that you're also putting in, and so you don't need unfermentable sugars from specialty grains. And in fact, in big beers like this, you need to add sugar to cut that and to make it drier.
Right.
So that's an interesting lesson to learn.
Yeah, it is, and it's something that I've grown into as well. You know, I think that honestly, I take a lot of notes from guys like at Russian River, and you know, I read all the same books you guys do, and try to learn as much as I can. And I think that this is a prime example of that, of showing restraint, you know, something that I've had to learn, and just got to think a lot about the end result of what the beer is, what the goal of the beer is, and just brew accordingly.
Well, luckily, Vinny Chalurzo from Russian River is more than willing to share.
Yeah, luckily.
Much to the benefit of everybody else. Mm-hmm. And this has been great. I'm sorry that it's taken me so long to get up here, Derek, but I appreciate your time. I appreciate the beers. I appreciate your willingness to share with us.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks for coming down. Like to follow you guys on Twitter, Instagram, and all that, and like to see what you guys are up to as well. So, you know, you guys push the boundaries as well, and I like to just learn, you know, alongside. So, thank you.
Well, thanks again to Derek. I really did enjoy those beers, all very clean and solid and tasty. And I intended to get pictures of the facility, but of course, I forgot. That'll give me an excuse to visit again, though. Also good to see Court Castleberry. I'm jealous of the gear that he gets to work with now. If you have brewing questions, show suggestions, or just want to say howdy, write to james@basicbrewing.com or just fill out the contact form at basicbrewing.com. Please don't forget to tell us where you're from. Check out our support link, where you can throw a couple of bucks into the tip jar by subscribing financially to our podcasts. Be sure to check out our DVDs, Extract Brewing and Partial Mashing, Stepping into All Grain, Low-Tech Lagering and Decoction Mashing, and Introduction to Wine Kits. You can find them all on our site. You can get a free Basic Brewing bottle opener with any DVD combo. You can check out our Basic Brewing shirts in the store as well. You can find our logbooks, where you can track and log up to 50 batches of beer. Check all those out at basicbrewingshop.com. Thanks to everybody who's continued to click on our Amazon.com link. We appreciate the support there. Our featured products this week that were purchased through the link are Hawaiian Punch Licensed Men's T-Shirt and Boss Heavy Duty Task Chair. Thanks again, everybody. And remember, I can't tell who bought what, so no worries there. Just click on the Amazon.com logo on our site the next time you feel like Amazon shopping, and we greatly appreciate your support. And don't forget, you can also join the American Homebrewers Association and subscribe to Brew Your Own magazine through the associate links on basicbrewing.com. That's all until next time. Until then, thanks for listening, everybody. I'm James Spencer. Production help for Basic Brewing Radio and our website is provided by Kelly Dotson. Basic Brewing Radio is a production of Active Voicing. We'll talk to you next time, everybody. So long.